Okay, Art of Sermon Delivery. You'll find the handout is there. And we'll see how we go. Prayerfully, you've done the work. You've looked at the text, worked out the central truth, structure of the talk is in place, captivating introduction, several illustrations, good explanations, challenging applications, dynamic conclusion. Now preach it. No pressure. Many a good sermon is lost because the presentation and the delivery of the sermon was lacking. And I know there are many times when I've dulled the impact of a good sermon because I haven't delivered it well. By God's grace, we want to move people to stir the soul, to call people to think, to feel and act. Let's start by thinking about the place of emotions in preaching. Cleopas and Simon on the road to Emmaus, they have an encounter with Jesus, Luke 24. The events that occurred on the days before Jesus' arrest and crucifixion and then the reports of Jesus' resurrection had left these two people bewildered. And Jesus appears to them and walks with them and explains. So Luke 24 on your sheets. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Explained what was said in all of the scriptures concerning himself. That must have been a very long walk. I imagine he probably worked out the intent of all scripture and explained that to them. Over dinner following, their eyes were opened and they recognized Jesus, and then he just disappeared. And at that point, the two turned to one another and they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us and opened the scriptures to us?" Now, I know that we are not Jesus, but wouldn't it be great if we left our listeners with burning hearts? John Chapman, who wrote a book on teaching and preaching, called his book Setting Hearts on Fire because of that passage. And that's what we want to do. So, preachers, you need to preach to comfort and to disturb those who come to hear what God is saying. And to do that, you need to, under God, preach to people's mind and heart and address their intellect and their emotions. God has given you the emotions, given them the emotions. It's worth rolling with that one. Now, Aristotle famously argued that there are three components to a persuasive message: logos plus pathos plus ethos equals persuasive rhetoric. Okay? Logos plus pathos plus ethos equals persuasive rhetoric. Logos is the verbal content, the word of the message, including its structure and its topic. So what's actually the words that are used to convey the meaning? Pathos is the emotive features, including passion and fervor and feelings that go into it, that in many ways drive the sermon forward, that push you along as you go. Ethos is the character of the speaker, especially shown in the empathy for the listener as they try and relate to the person who they're trying to persuade. And now you can see that in Paul's words to the Thessalonians. So see in your notes, 1 Thessalonians 1 verse 5. Our gospel came to you, says Paul to the Thessalonians. Gospel came to you not simply with words, there's your logos, but also with the power, with the Holy Spirit and deep conviction. That's pathos. You know how he lived among you. That's ethos, for your sake. You can see that drives how Paul is even thinking about what he's doing in there. Gospel came to you in those three different ways. And combined, that puts together to help people actually know how they're responding. So our logos is in our hand as we preach. It's from the Bible. It's the Word of God. That's the Logos in which we need to preach. Our ethos is the character of you as the preacher, and we're going to talk about more of that on the next day. So on the last training day, we're going to start the day thinking about you as a preacher, knowing that you're about to then go away and preach. The pathos is the deep conviction in which we stir up in the listener by the power of the Holy Spirit. We want to help people to feel the importance of responding appropriately to God. We want it to help recognize what's so important about what's going on. So John Piper, in his book Brothers, We Are Not Professionals, he has a chapter where he exhorts pastors and preachers to feel the truth of hell. You can see I'm writing talks on this at the moment. So I thought on your outline I've printed it in a bit of length there because I think it powerfully reminds us of the importance of feelings in preaching. I'm also printing it there because what he says itself is powerful preaching. What I want you to do is I want you to listen to the metaphors, his use of language. Even as he writes, we feel the force of what he's saying. And if you permit me, I'm going to try and preach it to you, really, as I read what he's written. And I know I'm no John Piper, but have a look and see how we go. Notice the use of metaphors, the powerful language that's used. It is not our most painful failure in the pastorate. The inability to weep over the unbelievers in our neighbourhoods and the carnal members of our churches. A great hindrance to ministry is the gulf between our biblical understanding and the corresponding passions of our hearts. The glorious and horrible truths which thunder through the Bible cause only a faint echo of fear and ecstasy in our hearts. We take a megaton of truth upon our lips and we speak it with an ounce of passion. I must believe in my heart certain terrible and wonderful things. If I am to love with the meek, humble, tender, self-effacing heart of Christ, I must feel the awful and glorious truths of Scripture. Specifically, I must feel the truth of hell, that it exists and is terrible and horrible beyond imaginings forever and ever. I must feel the truth that once I was as close to hell as I am to the chair that I'm sitting on or the pulpit I'm preaching on, I'll add. It's darkness, like vapor. It entered my soul and was luring me down. Its heat had already seared the skin of my conscience. I was a son of hell, a child of the devil and of wrath. I must believe that just as a rock climber, having slipped, hangs over a deadly cliff by his fingertips, so I once hung over hell and was a heartbeat away from eternal torment. I say it slowly, eternal torment. I must feel in my heart that all the righteousness of the universe was on the side of God and against me. In the balances of justice, I was lighter than air. I had not one fraction of right to appeal my sentence of condemnation. My mouth was stopped. I was corrupt and guilty through and through. If I do not believe in my heart these awful truths, believe them so they are real in my feelings, then the blessed love of God in Christ will scarcely shine at all. The sweetness of the air of redemption will be hardly detectable. The infinite marvel of my new life will be commonplace. The wonder that to me, a child of hell, all things are given as an inheritance will not strike me speechless with trembling humility and lowly gratitude. The whole affair of salvation will seem ho-hum, and my entrance into paradise will seem as a matter of course. When the heart no longer feels the truth of hell, the gospel passes from good news to simply news. The intensity of joy blunted and the heart spring of love is dried up. Motive stuff. Friends, we have emotions for good, God-given reasons. Emotions move us. They motivate us. And when it comes to preaching, we don't need to be emotional. We don't need to be without emotion. We can and we should aim to move people in what we say and how we say it, and let God do the rest of the work. Let the Spirit work with you to do the work that He said He will do. Now, that is not to say that we want to emotionally manipulate people. We don't want to do that at all. To massage or coerce the listener in an attempt to force them to succumb to our own position or change their position on the strength of a guilt-inducing, heart-wrenching, heart-pulling rhetoric or trickery, that's just dishonest. It doesn't honour God. It doesn't honour His message. So we're not about emotionally manipulating people. I remember hearing a story about Billy Graham in one of the crusades that he had when he came out to Australia. One of the news agencies was at one of the bigger rallies that they had at, you know, around Australia. And afterwards, in the news report the following day, the commentary on the night was all about the emotional manipulation that was at play, because what he'd done was he'd preached the Word of God in a very powerful way. And then he called people to come down the front and said, come down if you want to give your lives to Christ. While we're going to do that, we're going to make this a bit easier for you. We're going to get the band to play. And they played It Is Well With My Soul. And so they played this very, very emotive piece so that people could walk on down, you know, and receive the counseling they did. And the emotion of the thing was amazing. And so the newspaper article just basically criticized him for being so manipulative by using the music to coerce people down. So the following night, the next rally did the same thing, except he didn't play the music at all. And these people streamed down to the front with no music at all, the deadly silence of what that was. And then the whole emotion of the place just went up through the roof. There was no emotional manipulation in play. It was... My job was, we're calling people to Jesus. So be... Yeah, good question. What's the postscript? You're never going to... They'll never like that either way. Be prayerful, check your motivations, be humble, and preach to save souls by giving God the glory. We'll talk about what that means for you personally next week. Be prayerful, check your motivations, be humble, and preach to save souls by giving God the glory. Make sense? Okay, questions, comments? All right. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? All right. The art of sermon delivery. Let's think about the art of sermon delivery. Now, what I'd like you to do is I'd actually like to get you... I've given you fairly complete notes here because I don't want you to be looking at this academically. I'd like you to get up from your chairs and I want you to come on over here because this is a church. This is a pulpit. This is the things that you've got around you. You can see what the pews are around and where they are. I want you to sort of get up and sort of engage with the senses of what you've got around you. Come in here if you like and see what you've got with a pulpit. Recognize some of the things you need to be working around. If you're short, large pulpit, small pulpit. You've got the barriers around you. You've got the tables that are here, microphones, lights. Good point. Where's the camera? I don't know where the camera is. Okay. So let me give you the art of sermon delivery, and I'm going to go through a whole bunch of sort of hopefully practical tips as we sort of go. This is meant to be intensely practical. Okay, first, the text. Okay, be very intentional in what you plan to say. Run through the text, keeping in mind the following points, and cull or reshape. All can be done in your study as you're thinking through what it is that you're going to be doing. The central truth should shape everything you say. The more you say, the less people will remember. Use the shortest, most ordinary words you can. You do not have to show people that you are smart. The more you show them that you are clear and simple, the more they think you will be smart. Short, ordinary words. Use short sentences. Don't use complex clauses. When you read the letters of Paul, don't preach them that way. He doesn't know how to use grammar. He just throws in more and more subjunctive clauses over subjunctive clauses. Don't do that in a sermon. If you're under translation and somebody was to take what you just said and explain it to everyone else, and you said a whole series of statements that are all dependent on the statement before it, then they're going to get lost and you're not going to end up with a good message. So just one clear statement at a time.
I can't say the word is fecundate then.
Not if you want to be helpful for the translator. No, that's right. You are proclaiming, you're not submitting a written essay, Trace. You're not submitting a PhD in where you move. And I know that every time you said, however, because when you're preaching and you say, but however, or consequently, that's an argument in an essay. It's not what you say in general conversation. It's not what you would say as you're talking to somebody else. In where you move. Verbally, paint pictures with your words. You have this gift of being able to explain things. Let the words paint a picture without the use of the actual picture so that people can put it into their own minds. Boldly start sentences with conjunctions. What is that? With buts, so's, nows. But, yet, and. Terrible English, but excellent rhetoric and where they move. So start them with the conjunction of where you've got. Repeat yourself. Repeat yourself. Repeat yourself if you need to make the point. And if you're looking at it and you're seeing that people aren't connecting in there and you know it's a really important point, or the plane flies over just as you do that, repeat the point. Just because you haven't got it in your script as a repeated, repeat the point. If it'll be helpful. Translate narratives into the present tense. So if you're retelling a story that was told back then, tell it as if it's happening right now. Put it into the present in where they move. Very, very helpful tool to do. Yes, that you're not pretending to be Paul. You're not stepping to the shoes of Paul. Just bring it into the present tense. Illustrate the obvious. So often we think about illustrating only when we realize we've got a really difficult point to try and get across. That's an excellent thing to do. But state, explain, illustrate, it could be a very obvious point. But illustrating, it helps people actually see that point in a new way. So illustrate the obvious. And talk about real people. Talk about you and people in the congregation or people in our walks of life in the city that we live in history. The biographies are there. So the text will come to life as you make it real in that sort of sense. That's the text. Second, practice. Practice the sermon several times. Your aim is to be familiar, not just to be to deliver the content of the sermon. And make sure when you're practicing it, what you're listening for is the expression of the sermon. Have I got the words right? I'm not worried about the words as much as I'm worried about the expression of how you're getting it across, however you do it. Set up a makeshift lectern somewhere and preach the sermon. So you know where your lectern is, where it might be. You know what the height is. If it's not good for you, work out another way to change it so it does work for you. Remember when the Queen went to Congress in the US and she appeared and they didn't check out her height and all you saw on the camera was the top of her head because the lectern was ready for whoever it was that was president of the day who was much, much taller. So put something on the ground so that you are higher. Reduce the lectern. Use a music stand instead of the lectern if it doesn't work for you. Just work with what's going to be best. If you don't like it so far up on the stage because it's so far away from where everyone else is, move forward. Up to you.
Actually reshape the whole way that our seats are in our chapel every week we move them because my personal space, I don't throw that very far. So I knew that people weren't going to move closer to me. They're going to sit in the back row. So I actually took the ministry of the word off of the stage and put it onto the floor level because I knew that was going to be constructed for me.
That's really smart. Yeah, so in practice, find a place to do that. It just so happens the piano in my room is exactly the same height as where I like my lectern to be. And so if I'm practicing it in at home, then I can just put it on the top of the piano and it's the height that I like. And that lectern there is a portable lectern which sits in my office. And so when I practice it in my office, I just have it at the height that I want. When I then step into the church, up until recently, the church they usually preach on had a lectern at the same height. They changed the height, so I now use a music stand so that it's the height that I like, where they go. And when you're practicing, experiment with the way you say things. Find the most economic and catchy expressions. Have a lot of fun with that. Often by now, I have printed out the sermon. I don't need to go and retype out the sermon. All I need to do is make comments as I'm experimenting with it, and I write over my notes. You don't need to go over and over and over again, but write it in the ways that you want to say it, unless it's a dramatic rework. Practice the way you use your hands and your body language when you're preaching, so that you're not using the same hand thing the whole time. This is a favorite of preachers. It's the fishing rod hand movement. Let's just reel you in, and that's what we do the entire time. So use your hands in ways that are different. Make your points in different ways. You've got contrast now. I was talking about the difference on Sunday. I was talking about the difference between the Gentiles and the Romans. Jews and the Romans. So the Jews, the Romans. So you can, you know, you've got different ways of being able to use your hands in the way you work with what you do. I've often found watching weather reporters quite helpful. You know, and they're the ones that don't have a desk to sit at, and they're in situ. So if you watch what they do with their hands, they do this, and they only use their hand, and they have to use their hands intentionally because there's this visual map next to them. So they need to be able to point in exactly the right spot. So they this one, yeah. Because they can't really do the things that make it look as if they're closed off. So what you do with your hands is quite important. Don't take a pen up with you. I remember seeing somebody up there who spent the entire time while they were preaching playing with a pen. I remember seeing Don Carson preach. He was preaching away. He'd obviously made a spelling mistake, so he pulled out a pen while he was preaching, and he was writing as he was sort of going. And I'm thinking, you see me do that here, but I won't do that in a pulpit.
Where should the hands be?
They can be on the lectern. They can be, I think they're okay in your pockets, depending on the formality of what you've got. There is actually time when you cross my arms quite a lot, particularly if I'm wanting people to be thinking. You've got to work out how you use your body. There are other things. There's the application shuffle. There are people that will rise to their toes every time they get to the bit with the application. You think, we're getting to application now. There you go. There's the application shuffle. So and work out where they move. So you'll pick up those, whatever it is that you do. And you'll now see what's going to happen to all the people who watch me preach. They're going to go, look, he's getting to application, or he's doing. Practice in more than one setting. With hands, recognize your setting. If you're preaching to a group of 20 people and you are making the points as clear as you want to make, then the group of 20 people are going to think, what on earth are you doing? You're directing airline traffic into the airport, you know, where they go. Whereas if you're preaching to a group of 200 people, that actually won't be too extraordinary, because it's a much, much bigger setting. And so work out your hand gestures and the way you use your body in proportion with the group you've got. Generally, I think you'll feel as if this feels like this. So recognize that you can be more expressive than you feel.
And be aware there's a vase behind you, so you don't want that to go flying.
Yeah. The water container, the glass of water. Let me make this point. All the way over, yes.
Have you seen that happen before?
I've done it. So, yeah. In which case, you then worry because the water's all around the electric cables and step on the... You know. So we'll see, yeah. Abandon the idea that it will be better on the day. Okay? It'd be better to get it right in the study than thinking, that's okay, I'll just get rid of that idea. I don't think that's going to be your problem. And when you do it, note the time. Early on in your preaching sort of experience, you will be faster on the day, faster in the study than you will be on the day. But the reverse will be true with experience. Sorry, let me make sure I say that correctly. On the day, you'll be fast alive, the other way around. Yeah. Fast alive than you will be in your study. Yeah. With experience, it goes the other way around. Okay? So if you're timing it in your study, you know, oh, this is going to be 5 minutes, that's fine. On the day, you'll probably be 3 minutes.
Is that because as you gain experience, you're more likely to ad lib?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll see things going on. You'll get them in there. You'll see the person yawning. Or, you know, you see what happens. You're speaking faster.
Is that a bad thing that you finish earlier?
That you finish earlier, yeah, faster? If you've spoken so quickly that people haven't been able to hear or connect with what you've got, then yes, it's a bad thing. In where they go. If you've got a strong accent, be friendly to people, give them time to process and think. We'll talk about that a bit more as we go. It's helpful to memorize your key moments in the talk so that when, like key applications or your central truth, because if you can look at the person or look at people as you are going through, it's a very helpful way of engaging in where they move. And as you use your voice, vary your voice, your pace, your volume, and your pause. Okay, pitch, pace, volume, pause. What you want to do is you want to emphasize your central truth. So, the pitch, that is the high to low register in your voice. And often it is linked with pace, so the faster the pace, the higher the pitch. It doesn't need to be. If you listen to Don Carson preach, you'll hear as he gets faster, he'll go higher and higher and higher and higher, which is usually because he's forgotten to take a breath. But it's quite effective how he does it. Pitch. And it can be good. Pace. That's the speed in which you deliver your words. Slow or fast can both have an effect. The key is variety. Okay, so Don Carson again, he's a preacher who tends to speed up when he's making his most important points. Peter Adam is a preacher who slows down when he makes his most important points. The point is, has he got the point across? And where they move. Mark Driscoll, he typically clocks in at 175 words a minute. Tim Keller, between 162 and 177 words a minute. So you can see there's a bit of variety there.
It's like a fast bowler, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. And interestingly, neither Driscoll or Keller sound rushed, but they both sound energized. Okay, pitch, pace, volume. How loud or soft you speak is the volume. Given that we live in the age of the microphone, which is a real blessing, you can shout and you can whisper and everyone in the building will still be able to hear you. So if you use volume well, it can help emphasize your points. Particularly if you've got a microphone, because you can lean in on the microphone and you can just whisper it ever so clearly and people can take it with you. Can't really do that when you don't have microphones in there. Volume. And lastly, the often forgotten tool in preachers, in your verbal tool bag, the pause. The pause can be used to great effect. The pause can be very helpful for giving the listeners time to catch up and digest what you are saying. As a preacher, you don't want to verbally vomit all over your listener. And so give them time in reflection and decision as you go through. Now here, Peter Adam is the best. He's the master of the preaching pause. It feels like an eternity, but it's wonderful to do. Pause, look around. keep going. Feels like ages, but it can be very, very helpful. And here's the tip, plan the pause. So if you look at my script that I gave you for Acts 9 last time, you'll note it's written into my notes. It says short pause, long pause. It has, you know, it's quite clearly that's there. And practice it. Ensure that the pause is actually a period of silence as opposed to a pause for breath. You know, make sure that there is a gap in there in the way that you do. So, pitch, pace, volume, pause. The key is your agility to be able to switch between pace, pitch, volume, pitch, pace, volume, and pause. How you move between them will help you in the way that you draw attention to what you are saying as opposed to how you are saying it. Okay? If you don't notice the pause, it's partly because people have recognized what you are saying as something that they're thinking on through. Now, dull preaching is characterized by monotone delivery, where pitch, pace, volume drone on with little variety or consistency. And that's similar to what the bedtime story does for you. It's hypnotic. It lures you into a sense of expectation as you go off to sleep. The listener already has a bed. Do what you can to ensure that they hear your sermon in the clear and present rather than in the nod and future, okay? So don't prepare them for their bed. And that said, be you. You're not an actor. Be natural. Let it come out the way that you want. Okay, that's pretty drawn out. Questions, comments?
If you haven't spoken before with the microphone, the first time you do it can be quite disconcerting.
Yeah.
Especially the fallback's not right.
Yeah.
Because you'll speak, you don't hear yourself speak, you hear all the echoes coming back, and that's why there's a speaker usually nearby which you hear yourself through. But if you're going to be using a microphone, then you probably want to try it out.
Yeah.
In that venue if you can.
Yeah.
Just to get used to it.
That's very helpful. Anything you can do to get familiar with the setting would be good. I'm going to talk about microphones. Actually, come around down here. Come down around for the next bit. Let's just pretend this is the pulpit because I want to show you something with the microphone. So come on down as we go. If you can, before you preach, if you can step up into the pulpit and just check what it's going to be like for you so that you know where everything is, that will help you out. Let me make a couple of comments about the preacher, and then we'll make some comments about some techniques. Again, this is just meant to be practical. Preacher. We're going to talk more about the character of the preacher next time we get together, but this is worth mentioning because you're going to be, you know, doing your sermons. Firstly, dress. Dress for the occasion. If you don't know, ask. It's a good rule of thumb to dress one step above what the congregation is wearing. Okay, that's the rule of thumb, one step above what the congregation is at. My first day at Narrenburn Anglican Church after college, I walked in a full suit to the 8 o'clock congregation thinking it would be a shirt and tie type of place, and they were nothing like it. And so I was so incredibly overdressed. Take the jacket off quickly, work out whether I wear the tie or not, just one step above where generally the congregation is. What you wear shouldn't be a distraction. Do not wear your Adelaide Crows stuff in the pulpit, because what you are doing is you're commending Jesus. You are not commending the Crows, partly because there might not all be Crows fans in front of you, or if they are, you've got the Crows fans, you've got the Port fans all offside straight away, and all of the Crows fans spend the entire time thinking about their team winning or losing. And so wear what's not going to be a distraction. One of my students got his tongue pierced the week before his first sermon. So he called me on Saturday night and said, "I'm having a problem because I can't actually, my tongue is swollen so much that I can't actually get the word."
Did he preach on Sunday?
No, I did. And when it comes to actually what you wear, generally lighter, not patterned colours on the top half of your body will work, and no check. no check patterns, particularly if you're going to be on camera, because it sort of does that, like, you know, those puzzles you stare into and eventually the dragon comes out of the puzzle. That's what checks do to cameras. So try and keep the strike as plain as possible is really helpful, and generally light. If you are all white, then that looks like, you know, you've got that angel thing going on. Try and add something in there, but lighter is generally better. So that's dress. Vocal cords. The way they will give away, your vocal cords will give way if you're not used to doing a lot of public speaking. Because if anything, you're at a point where you are straining and you practiced it, you're up late, you're doing whatever it is that's there. So here's some tips. Have water nearby. Avoid drinking caffeinated drinks before speaking. So fizzy drinks, coffee, avoid doing that before, because that dries out your vocal cords. I quite like milk. I drink a lot of milk. What it does is it feels like it lacquers my vocal cords, which is quite helpful. Having said that, if you have a reflux issue, that could be a problem, because it also feels as if it's repeating on you, which doesn't work well in a pulpit. If you still lose your voice, then just take it as a sign from God that He doesn't want you to speak that day. No, you got to work out what you do. So care for your greatest tool there in some way. Honey with warm water. Yeah. Warm water is actually a really good thing to have around all of the time. So, yeah. Okay, vocal cords. And last, be energized. Be interested and energetic about what you're saying. If you're not, then how do you expect those around you to be excited about it if you're not excited by it? And somebody said to me once, preach yourself dry. Preaching is hard work. And, you know, I think I can relate to that. I got home on Sunday nights and I'm usually close to catatonic in some ways. That's also because of the conversations. Just preach yourself dry. Leave it all there in the pulpit. And then see how you go. So there's the preacher. Now, techniques. Microphone technique. Here's a microphone. If you're using a set microphone, recognize that when you're speaking into the microphone, it will hear you when you're speaking to it, but not if you're constantly turning away. So it's a really good idea to look at the people over there, but if the microphone is no longer picking you up, you have to work out your technique. And so the way you do that is you speak to them over there as you talk. So you make sure that you always round out around the microphone as you talk, so that it's there. Now, you don't need to do the, is this on, is this on? You know, you don't have to, you know, they do the Logies where they always sort of bend over to the top of things. You don't need to do that. That's the tech, the wonderful, wonderful audio tech team will look after what that is. If it's not right, somebody will come rushing. But help them by recognizing that they will only pick up what you are saying when you are pointing in the direction of the microphone. So if you're using one of these, as much as you can, try and get it into something. So particularly if you're using notes, but don't make sure you do it. So don't do the constant thing where you're making your point and then you move the microphone away because you're making the point with your hand, because all of a sudden people it drops in and drops out and where they go. So you've got to make sure you work with your technique. If you've got the headsets, that's great. Just be careful when you sneeze. Be careful when you go to the bathroom afterwards if the tech team are a little bit lazy. Work out where you move. Personally, I prefer the headset because it means I can look around and I can do what it's going to be, and it picks us up wherever you go. Check where they go. Be a friend to the audio ministry team. So I tend to look for where the audio guys are before I start, because often they could have other things going on for them, and so it's helpful. Otherwise you end up saying, is this on, is this on? Or you start and then they turn you on and you blow everybody out of the building in where they do. And what do you do when mishaps or technical difficulties occur? There's very little you can control. And so in many ways, what you've got to do is you just got to rely on the people who are the experts to do what they're going to do until you are told otherwise. And hopefully they'll do that quickly. In terms of what Roger was saying about the foldback, you do, if you're in a church where you get the repeat back again, you just have to work out how to ignore it. But it's quite clear when people can't see you, because they'll start saying it And so you've got to, you'll pick up the cues and you can work out what it might be. And so it may be, you'd say, it looks to me as if people can't hear me or this is too loud. Should I be doing anything about that? And wait till the tech team tells you what you're doing. If there are screens around you, then recognize that movement you'll pick out of the corner of your eye. So at the cathedral in Sydney, you have screens all around, and when you're standing in the pulpit preaching, you are facing yourself preaching, which is bizarre. It's just because of the way the layout goes, and it takes a while to get to the point where you just you're not constantly thinking there's a person over there wanting me to do something or waving or something at me, because you're always moving in there. And so you just got to work out how, what those elements are and what they do. This is very practical and anal, but anyway. Notes versus tablet versus no notes. You use a tablet?
I just started doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit different.
Works.
Yeah, I once have got up for assembly and hit the off button. Like, oh, well, just go from memory then. Yeah, so that's got to be aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so a mate of mine was doing a wedding, and he was standing, it was an outside wedding, he does all of his notes on a tablet, and realised that when you're standing out there in the sun, you can't actually see the tablet. It would have been better to have manual notes there, you just got to work that out. I tend to put it in a folder, and that way I can flip it and it's always in order, and I can then do multiple services, not worrying about whether I've got to reset my notes. If it is a tablet, put it into a locked version, so don't put it into Word, for example, put it into a PDF so it's locked. And that way you can actually extend the size of it and other things. You can go as far as putting it into a preaching audio prompt program, so Darren Russ does that. That's too much work for me. Darren Russ...
What's the audio prompt program?
You'll have to ask him. Which is very good. It basically means that it highlights the text that you're at in the middle of your page, and as you scroll on up, it shrinks down what you've already covered and shows you exactly on the tablet where you're up to. That takes practice, and he's much more wise than I am, but so see how you go. You have to work out what you do. So notes, tablet, no notes, work out what it is. Even if you're preaching from the Bible, you're all preaching from the Bible, by the way, but if you're preaching from only Bible notes, I've used a post-it note where I put the points on the post-it note on the inside page when I'm doing something evangelistic, where I often don't use notes. That may be helpful. Bible versus Bible app. When you say, have a look at the Bible, have a look at this verse, make sure you give people time to look it up. And often that means they don't do it at all, so give them more time. Oh, I don't want to go, it'd be rude of me to go on until you've got it in front of you. I'll wait. So people open their Bibles or their tablets or whatever it might be, because you want them to be engaging if the Bibles are actually there in front of them, where they move. I personally don't like having the Bible on the screen unless it's a quote, because I want people to be engaging with it in front of them. And so work out how you do what you do. When it comes to preaching with a Bible, because I'm getting people to look at a Bible, one of the nice things about having a Bible app is you can actually step out from behind the pulpit if you've got the headset things, and you can read the text straight from the, because you know you're reading from verse 5 to verse 10 or whatever it might be. So the notes are there, and so you can step out from behind the pulpit and use that. Can't do that as easily with a tablet, if that makes sense. There's some techniques. Any other comments, questions about that?
Something I found helpful, this goes back to an earlier point, is to, actually I haven't done it, have I done it myself? I'm not sure, but I was advised by someone in Toastmasters to practice in front of a mirror.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which sounds awfully terrifying, yeah. And it probably is awfully terrifying, but it can be helpful in...
Yeah, that's right. I agree. A mirror can be helpful. Bathrooms could be the most converted rooms in lots of preachers' houses. You got to work out what that is. I don't personally do that anymore. I'm sure I've done that in the past. It's something. My stunning good looks probably distracted me, so we'll see.
Bulb that holds it, so the whole thing rattles. So I don't touch it very much. But so you just get a feel for where you would put your hands and how you feel in that space. And you know, you want to, where the microphone's positioned, that, just so you get a bit of a concrete take on the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, making sure it's not right on the edge of a step, which means that it suddenly falls off and flies forward and your notes go up in wave of glory. And then you've got a deconstructionist sermon from that point on. So next week you're going to be in a room out the back. You're going to be here and you're going to be a room over there in three different groups in the way that you do it. Before I look at those, as a preacher, be a praying preacher. Talk to God about what you're going to be doing and ask for his help. It is his work. And allow him to be part of what you do. There, my friends, is the art of sermon delivery. Have some fun, enjoy it, make it your own, and people will want to see you go well with it. So you've got to work out how you do it. Yeah.
One thing I think, well, this is just me, I guess. I hate reading novels where it's written in present tense. And you've got to, more or less as a directive here, translate narratives into present tense. I've just been trying to put some of the Bible passages and trying to put it in present.
Yeah.
And I'm not comfortable, so it's a really matter of
Yeah, so that's going to say the question there is I've suggested that when you're retelling stories or retelling narratives, then put it into the present. Does it matter if you don't? Ultimately, you have to feel comfortable with doing that. Personally, I think it's more engaging because the rhetoric is different to a written word. The oral presentation is different to the written word. If I was writing it, I wouldn't put it in the present. I would put it in the past. But that's because of the medium of writing. But when it comes to drawing people in, you want to be able to draw it into as much as you can into the present. Now, it could be, you say, let me tell you a story that happened a long, long time ago, first yeah, through, and that can all be in the past. You have to be comfortable with the way you do that. Retelling conversations can be helpful. You know, I was saying this, and then you sort of play the parts and you repeat what's said. That's done much, much better in the present than it is in the past. Yeah.
What about roaming versus behind the lectern? So that's the opportunity of your walk at this appearance.
Yeah.
You tend to stay maybe 50% of the time, but sometimes you just 100% of the time.
Yeah. I think roaming is good, provided it's not distracting in there. Part of the reason why we often stay where we are is because I'm on camera and I've been told you're supposed to stay in that location. You have to work that one through. The more you can engage and walk out, and don't walk down the middle of the church if it means that people are going to be looking backwards, but moving around is good. If it's because you don't have notes and you're just making something up on the spot, then it'd be better that you just went back to the pulpit. But, you know, you have to work that one out.
When we preach in 2 weeks' time, are we going to have access to PowerPoint slides if we want to use visual?
Okay, that's what we're going to talk about.